Hi everyone, this is Andrea and I'd like to welcome you to our June webinar and podcast episode. A quick reminder on asking questions. If you're joining us live today, you have the opportunity to ask a question at any time. Just use the Q&A function on your Zoom control panel and that will be answered at the end of this session. If you're viewing the recording or listening to the podcast later and would like to ask a question, feel free to contact us directly at smithinc.com. I'll now hand over to David Smith, Smith Inc. Director, who will be presenting along with Rob Cameron of FYI, process automation, how it will change the accounting profession. Over to you, David.
Thanks very much, Andrea, and good afternoon, everybody, or good morning if you're in the West. Welcome to this webinar. It's good to talk to you about this topic, which I think is one of the game changers for the accounting industry going forward. But the interesting thing is, from my perspective at least, is that this concept has been around for quite some time. And I just want to give you an example from 1988, in fact. So that's what, 35 years ago, where my accounting firm had to move all of its accounting ledgers from one software supplier to another. It was around about 2,000 or 3,000 ledgers. And we thought that was a hugely expensive exercise to transfer all those ledgers across. And instead of doing that using manual labor, we used a software product at the time, which some of the older people in the audience might know about, called SmartKey, which is essentially was a keystroke logging software product that would remember keystrokes. And using that product, we managed to get the system to memorize all the keystrokes to convert the ledgers. And the end result of that was that we were able to convert a ledger from go to woe in the matter of 1 or 2 minutes, which would have taken at least an hour for somebody to key it all in. So you could argue that this concept of process automation has been around for quite some time. And in fact, interestingly, when you look at the process automation products that are available, many of them continue to use the same concepts of keystroke logging, mouse movement logging, et cetera, to create the same sort of effects that we were doing in 1988. Obviously, the software is a lot more sophisticated now than it was then, but I think we've got an interesting situation now that I think there's a confluence happening of tool sets that are making this easier for accountants to access software products which really bring this to the fore. And that brings me to Rob, who Rob and I worked together in the 1990s. I think Rob was a two-year-old at the time. We developed a few things, including document management based on Lotus Notes that some of you might remember. So Rob's been around this industry for a long, long time and understands the sorts of concepts that we're trying to deal with here. So g'day, Rob. How are you?
G'day, David. Looking forward to our chat today. Very excited and always good to catch up with you as well.
Yeah, always good to catch up with you. And so just give me your spin, Rob. As you look at this world of process automation, how do you see it? How would you define it, and how do you see what accountants need to be thinking about in terms of it?
Yeah, it's a really interesting topic because it's interesting now because, as you say, we've moved forward. We're in 2022. And to a certain extent, it's all around us already. So it might sound new, but you're actually seeing it every day with no doubt some of the apps you're using. So that's one point. The other one is, it's interesting for me because obviously I'm in the game. I'm a supplier. There's an interesting challenge here of one of the key points I want to communicate is, I think the impact on our profession is going to be enormous over the next 3 years. So, and that, obviously it's a difficult one to, if you ask for exact numbers, it's difficult because you don't know where any practice is starting the journey. But our research, our studies, our analysis says you could see a 50% reduction in terms of labor costs to do the typical things you're doing today.
Why are you saying that? So what's the driver that will create the 50%?
if you I've sat down and gone through and did a time and motion type study and looked at the entire journey from gathering the data, planning the whole job itself, gathering the data, actually making sure that you never rekey, you know, how much time is spent in rekeying data, the risks and the genuine costs that happen with transposition errors, going all the way through to using different apps across your system and potentially even rekeying out again, bringing the data back in again, lodging, et cetera, and doing the billing and everything.
So in two senses, then, you're talking about elimination of duplication of effort, as you say, rekeying the data. But is there a second element here that the processes that are used, particularly in the world of compliance, are pretty regimented processes, which means that if it's a, you know, I heard many years ago, you know, the technologist saying, well, if the process is duplicated, then you can automate.
Yes, absolutely. Any repetition. So yeah. A good way, I reckon it's also a good way to communicate or to bring this alive is you think about bank recs. So it's a pretty boring topic, this is part of the core thing what we're talking about. Think about pre-Xero, pre-Banklink. That bank recs were a bit of a nightmare. You'd literally sit there and you'd have to sit there with the actual bank statement and do a comparison of entries in the ledger and match them singular across. And if you got to the end, it didn't rec, you'd have to go back and recheck.
In the 1970s, around 1978, I spent 6 weeks doing the bank rec of a big law firm.
Yeah, I'd say that you weren't very good at bank recs, but no, I'm kidding. But if I use that, that's all gone away now, thankfully, because of all the advancements. But if you apply that almost as an analogy across all parts of it, and it goes back to, as you say, fundamentally, it's eliminating the rekeying of data. If the data exists somewhere, some point electronically is part of the ecosystem, you'll get to a day that you'll be able to leverage that data downstream and avoid rekeying at all points. Effectively, you can map it through, and that's huge in itself. Beyond that, it's the supporting tasks around a lot of these processes. The process and automation engines will start doing things for you at this point, creating an email for you based on that particular use case or that combination, and start automating the other tasks around it, such as communication, updating job boards, etc. And when you blend all that together and you look at literally not the concept of never having to rekey data to eliminate the problems of transposition errors and then automation of tasks, it's just incredible across practice life. So that's probably some of my sort of initial thoughts is just do not underestimate the size of this, the magnitude of this. And therefore, as part of that, you obviously want to make the right decisions up front. You don't want to go down the wrong pathway.
So in FYI, as an example, you know, what you've attempted to do from what I can see is you've attempted to build a toolkit that builds the pieces of this automation.
Yes.
In a way that you don't need to be a technologist to build the pieces. Is that a good way of describing it?
I think we actually do get asked this a little bit, saying what makes you different, which is a good way of saying it. I think one of our approaches, which not all of it was planned, it's just often with life, things happen in a certain way. Our approach is to be verticalized. So we're coming at it from a point of view as we hire, wherever we can, we hire ex or current chartered accountants, CPAs in our team. So that's my background. So there are generic platforms out there. There are amazing platforms out there like Zapier, like from Microsoft, Power Automate. But our approach is to go verticalized in the accounting bookkeeping industry and go top to toe. And there's a huge amount of payback or benefits, I believe, from doing that, which is basically we're dealing with the exact needs of the profession. We're wiring together disparate systems in advance so that you don't have to do all that yourself.
So give us a couple of concrete examples, can you, about how accounting firms, you know, your customers today are using this tech?
Yep. So I reckon a classic example, one of the ones that we did quite early, and there's other great players in this area as well, which is dealing with tax assessments. And I'm going to use the Australian context today for the New Zealand listeners, but it's basically receiving data, creating being part of the ATO, part of their overall ecosystem, bringing in the tax assess, the assessments for the, say, individuals, then some of the opportunities is, apart from just bringing that data in and having it matched up immediately, seeing being automatically brought in and filed based on, say, the tax file number, is then the other benefits here is doing a cross-check back into your tax system, say, in this case, zero tax, checking whether or not it agrees, disagrees, putting in a degree of materiality to that, then saying, right, we've got a situation here that we've received it, we've got the assessment, it actually agrees with what we originally estimated. And we can look at the client's preferences in our CRM system. It says they want to hear from us electronically, email, and therefore create a corresponding outbound email of covering all of that, including sending securely a link to a hosted copy of that document. And that whole thing happens automatically. And there's another stream for variances. So that goes off to the relative partner to deal with the fact that the assessment didn't equal the estimate. So that
this, Rob, could give me the heebie-jeebies.
What?
That all of a sudden I've got a computer communicating with my clients.
Yeah.
And what happens if that computer stuffs up?
Absolutely. So one of the big questions here is the degree of, basically, is it replacement? We don't believe it is. I think for the foreseeable future, it's going to be about augmentation. It's about humans and the machines interacting together. The concept that you'll have a black box and it'll all just happen is just too scary. So that's what we recommend, is having it so that effectively the net result is it spits out the result. You can look at the logic behind it and see why that is, but it's a draft email and it's put into the hands of one of your trusted team members, and from there they can decide. And the other thing here is there's a danger of losing personalization. So if you start receiving just generic messages going, well, I could work with any accounting firm here. Reason why I like you guys is you know me as a person. So the ability to put a bit of a message in there as well. Not that you do that probably with assessments, but that's the overall concept, is to make sure that people don't feel like they're dealing with a machine, not a bunch of people on the other end as well.
But that's also an element of what you've tried to do, is to allow people to heavily customize what that communication is suitable to their firm too, so that even though it's generic, it can have a very much a firm feel about it.
Yeah.
And I suppose my thinking is that people will be paranoid about a computer communicating directly with my client.
Yeah.
But if it gets it right 99.99 times out of 100, maybe I'm going to get to the point that I don't care anymore.
Yeah, I think that is right. But you have to go, I think every firm will have to go through that journey to get that trust up. And there's no one who's going to jump straight on. The other one I think is really interesting in terms of, it's amazing how as a subconscious, subliminally, when you receive a message from any organization and it's overtly, effectively coming from the machine, it's almost like a newsletter type thing. I know myself that I look at that and I go, well, I'm going to read that later. I'm not going to read it at all because I haven't bothered to send that to me directly. So a subtle thing for us is to make it so the resulting email actually does come from the manager, the accountant. As soon as you start getting a generic looking message, I think the impact and the communication impact of that message massively drops as well.
Yeah, we've probably got to be a little bit careful here that the communication with the client piece is just one very small element, isn't it? Most of the automation is actually internally in the firm. Would that be right?
Yeah. Yeah, so it's actually, when I started FYI 5 years ago, I'd have to say this element to it, to start off with, we were mainly the big drive was about getting your documents up in the cloud and getting it offsite, and that was a key driver. But what's taken me by surprise is the in the modern world, the ability for various disparate apps to connect together and to be able to share data and logic between themselves, and for it to work reliably. So you're not in a situation where you're constantly saying, well, this is not working, and this app is not talking to the other app. The payback from that, the cloud, but that concept of integration between various innovative apps has been, that's the biggest game changer of all. Mm. Whereas years ago, I don't think, when we started out in the late 90s, thanks for reminding me of that and telling everyone that, but that I think just, it almost was technically possible, but realistically, it just, you couldn't hold it together. Whereas I find them on these thing called APIs, they're incredible in terms of how reliable they are and how it is working out there.
Yeah, the concept of being able to communicate and move data between applications is so much easier and so much more robust than it used to be. Is there another element to this, Rob, which is around how I'd want to describe it, I suppose, about building alarms for when things go wrong too? Yeah. Is that another level of automation that you're seeing firms starting to think about?
Yeah, I'd probably say it a little bit differently as well, which is there is a, here's sort of pitfalls in terms of we very much believe in operating exactly as we're recommending. So we eat our own dog food using that Bill Gates term. There's probably more positive ways of describing it. We live the dream is another way of saying it. And so there is some interesting realizations. There's takeaways you have. One of them is when you get something working, there is a tendency to say, okay, that's working now, we can ignore it and we can deploy our resources elsewhere, or the team member who used to do that sort of, you know, either, you know, moves up, moves on, whatever. And there's a danger there that while this all, the technology is fantastic and I'm very big, very in favor of it, there's always a risk that something on any given day in 3 months' time doesn't go according to plan. And all of a sudden you can be in a situation where you go, well, we don't have much corporate knowledge around that anymore. So I think thinking in advance and looking at whatever system you're evaluating and making sure that there's A, it's robust in itself, but also to have safeguards that you look at and you trust, which is alerts if things don't go according to plan, and also visibility of what is happening, sort of the ability to trace, to be able to look backwards and see what's going on.
It's like a online documentation of the process that's being followed. Is that right?
Well, it's the alerts, it's that sort of stuff. Like sometimes you don't, you know, hate to speak negatively, but if a bot's going slightly sideways, you don't want that to happen 3 days before someone works it out. So there's alerts as well. The other one you mentioned there, which is the whole concept of having almost the documentation, that's another interesting sort of unexpected benefit that I've witnessed is years ago when we had we all correctly were encouraged to go and make sure that your procedures and your business are documented.
Go and read the e-myth. Yeah.
Yeah. The e-myth, the Gerber approach, which was all correct. The danger though, the reality of it is for your longstanding team members, after about 3 months, they start to go, well, I'm not going to go read that procedure again because I know what I'm doing. But that's a little bit in terms of it. What happens, you start to have divergence. I think a well-designed, well-run process automation engine infrastructure, what we've seen is it really, if it's made so that it's almost a contract between the practice, the technology, and the users, that people don't fight it. They actually go, this is good. This does half the job for me. That becomes your living, breathing procedural manual that almost draws everyone together on a daily basis. You can't sort of avoid it because the system is, you know, going a certain way, the job board's being updated, say, hypothetically, automatically. The ability for someone to go and diverge and do things completely different is massively reduced. So consistency, and also as part of that, risk reduction is byproducts of this as well.
So is there a danger here that we are going to continue to lose skills? So the example that when I first joined the profession, I had partners who could run their finger down the phone book and add the numbers up. Yeah. And clearly that's a skill that is completely lost to the profession now.
Yeah, I think the kids today, they don't know anyone's phone number ever.
That's right. And I have a feeling that handwriting and spelling are next on the list to disappear. But, you know, the question is, are we in danger that these automations start to take away skills and that we become completely dependent upon the tech because we lose the skills?
Yeah, I think a little bit what you said earlier, which is if it is to be, that's the way it's going to be. But then that's dangerous because you can have situations where people's knowledge become so bad that they don't understand the fundamentals. But if I look back, go back to bank recs again, the youngsters, or you know, not even youngsters, does anyone know how to do a bank rec properly? Well, it just doesn't matter. And the fact that it all happens, and I think there's that, what that does is free up capacity to get more into business advisory, or I'm talking conceptually, is rather than worrying about that stuff, well, work out how to improve a business and how to the soft skills to be able to mentor or to be able to manage or help your clients.
Yeah, it does heighten the need for alarming, doesn't it?
Yes.
If the skills are sort of maybe not as strong as they used to be, you need the alarming to really thump people over the head and say, you need to look at this.
Absolutely. And skills full stop is an interesting thing, which is that we do witness some firms who take process automation and just eat it up. Like they're literally just almost ringing, what can you do this? And other firms, you can see that they it's very slow to take, and I think it probably comes
down to... So what do you think's the difference, Rob? What do you think is the difference between the firms that are being successful moving down this road compared to the firms that are maybe struggling a bit?
I think it's probably got to do with whether or not the people... It's a whole range of factors, as it always is, but sometimes I think it's got to do with whether or not you've got it's an old-fashioned term, but a digital native in charge of the project. It could be cultural as well, which is the acceptance of risk, because any change in a practice is risk. So if you have a culture where the team don't feel like they're enabled or they've got the permission to go and do a few things differently, that can hold them back as well. Yeah. Is whether or not you've got the right team member running it who naturally thinks like this. So there's certain sort of attributes in someone who basically they talk, their face light up when they talk about technology. They also just naturally want to go off and explore things. That's the sort of people I think you'd be looking for.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think you've also got to get your head into the mind of the user. And I'll go back to the 1990s when you and I were putting document management into our firm. And we had a tax consulting partner who refused to use it. And in the end, there was two techniques to solve that problem. One was we put somebody in his office for a week, so every time he had a problem, we had an instant response on how to solve that problem so that we're able to get him up to speed in using the tech. And the other thing is he didn't trust being paperless, and so we told him every time he did a document to print it off and he could put it in the corner of his office if he ever needed it. And what that did was 3 months later, he had a pile of paper in his office that he'd never looked at, and he realized the system would work for him, and he became one of the biggest advocates of the system. There is a bit of a need here to bring the people with you, and it may slow you down in the implementation, but these people who might be a bit resistive ultimately can become the biggest advocates.
Yeah, absolutely. I think what you're calling out overall, which is a spot on, is change management. Is in we do see situations where the partner and the champion have sat through the various demonstrations and they're very excited, and then they go live and there's they struggle a bit, and then I've had a sort of one of our clients reflect backwards, going, I just realized that we were privy to all the big picture, where it was heading, all the benefits, but the team just had it dropped on them one day. So they were sitting there going, I could see nothing but a bit of change pain, but no real upside. Is don't underestimate that, that the need to sort of give, it's that Simon Sinek type stuff, the reason why, is making sure that you're crystal clear, taking a little bit of extra time, even running trials, I think, is really important. So even though you say, don't worry about it, I think we're all decided here, we're all running a trial and having a successful trial and having it doesn't have to be heavyweight, but just having the definition of success, saying, the current process is this, we're going to do it like this, we did it, we saw the results. And even just looking around the room goes, does everyone agree? So it's creating that acceptance and almost not documenting it, but just making it so that you can't have backsliders going, oh, I never really liked this approach.
And giving people a feeling that they've had some involvement in how the processes are going to look. One of the things which I think is a danger with this stuff is that a lot of people will take their current process and say, I want to automate that. Whereas really what you should be doing with this tech is rethinking from the ground up what the process should be. And have you found that that's an issue with the firms that you've been working with?
I agree. And this is a broad comment, I think, on technology. I think sometimes you're best off just if whether it's not necessarily our technology, any technology, if it works a certain way, is to look at it going, even though we used to do it that way, we should just adopt that. Because getting the platform to bend to us is you just have to be, it's almost pragmatism going, really? Yeah, that's not the terminology we used to use. It's not the exact process. But if you use best practice, chances are you're going to go better. So I think there's a definite element there of really, there's some things you don't want to move on that there are literally the your hard requirements. But some things you go, well, it's just, there's no real difference between the two of them. Let's just change. In which case we're not the exception. We're part of the broader community.
Yeah. Now you're obviously a supplier in this space, but I could equally go out and buy process automation tools from Microsoft and others.
Yep.
What's the difference? You know, why couldn't I just go and do that?
You could. And there are great products out there. We use one of them, which is Zapier, say, and then Microsoft got their product and there's various other ones.
If I use Zapier as an example, what would it deliver for me?
Yeah. So Zapier is, just to give everyone a bit of background, if you haven't seen it before, it's a quite a large American company that has. Here's the big sort of upside with something like Zapier, to be open and honest, is that it has 2,000 B2B SaaS, software as a service, applications in there. So the chances of you going in there and saying, does it connect with MailChimp or whatever it is, you're very low. It's not going to be there. It's got quite a rich interface in terms of it's what we talked about years ago, the fifth generation of languages of software languages will be more like the average user can write stuff, a bit like sort of Excel is in some ways. Zapier is a bit similar. So they're all the upside. So why wouldn't I recommend that you do that necessarily across the board? Is you're literally starting from ground zero. So you'd have to go through and start literally going through and configuring up every scenario yourself from scratch, including all the exceptions, including the alerts that we talked about, et cetera, et cetera, which, you know, I think take you a long time. And you would have seen this before when you've, say, an analogy for that scenario is I'll go build a really complicated macro in Excel. It's great for the first 3 to 6 months, or you might get some kid to do it for you. But then that person goes off and goes snowboarding in Canada or whatever, and all of a sudden you're looking at it going, we're now dependent on this thing. And yet it's almost like a bespoke bit of IP.
Or worse, Microsoft upgrades their software and breaks it.
Yes. So I think anything you do, whether it be designing your own website or anything, and it's not saying any of this is a bad idea, I'm not being that broad. You just have to look at it from the lens of saying, in 2 years' time, is this supportable? Is this going to be something that we can maintain, or are you going to be a bit sort of fragile?
So is there a danger that, you probably wouldn't mind this at all, but is there a danger that I become completely dependent upon my software provider here, and that, if my software provider screws up, I can't do anything about it because I'm so dependent upon them?
That's a horrible thing to say in some ways, but there is an element of which there is, at some point, there has to be a level of trust. You have to provide, it comes down to evaluating your suppliers, and this sort of stuff is quite pivotal, quite very strategic. So you do need to look at it and say, have I got referrals? Have they got track record? Have they been in the industry for a long while? Are there people that we believe that they've got a vision going? The other thing is, you're buying this sort of tech at the level that I'm sort of suggesting, making it quite fundamental to your practice strategy going forward, you're actually making probably a 3-year decision if you're being realistic. Now with the good thing about SaaS is you can move, as part of GDPR and various regulations out there in the world, there is the ability to be able to, you should always demand it, the ability to exit easily. But the reality is you don't want to do that. So therefore, I think it's important to look over the horizon a bit and say, do this potential supplier have a vision for the future, and do I believe they're going to be there for the long haul? So as part of that, also, as I said, make sure your exits are clearly identified. So it's unacceptable if you can't get the data out, including metadata, et cetera.
Yeah, you've got to be able to exit. You talked about the future. Well, just paint the future a little bit. Where do you see this world heading, Rob?
Yeah, like I said, I think it's like the work of looking, staring, gazing at a white wall and just thinking about it, and also the analysis we've done with time and motion studies it's going to keep on escalating and getting bigger. So I think about in terms of across the practice, things like marketing, HR, practice administration, compliance, advisory, and think about just something simple like onboarding a new employee. So in the countries we live in, with the high income countries that we're part of, your team is everything. They're the assets of your business. So onboarding them, inducting a new team member efficiently, and not just from a pure sort of let's cut the cost down. I'm saying bring them on and for them to understand your culture, your vision, your how you work. You know, there are various studies out there saying that costs up to $3,000 depending on the size of the business to do that. So I think it's heading towards, you'll see this process automation happen wider and wider across your business. So I gave the example when you are saying about tax assessments, quite a secular, very sort of direct, compelling what the industry we're in, but I think it will happen broader and broader as well. It's client onboarding, client offboarding, employee induction, using it in almost any repetitive process across your practice. I think it has merit, or at least should be considered.
So one of the concerns that practitioners have around all of this automation, and you go back to, you know, transaction memorization as a good example, is that there's less and less work for more junior people. Yeah. And so the problem that creates is, where's the training ground gone? And where do these young people get the skills? That's, I think, an interesting challenge that gets generated by this, doesn't it?
It does. But it also goes back to I do think there's an interesting, you and I had this chat a while ago, which is, I think there's an interesting concept when, and I'm going to sound like old man of the sea here, but when people don't understand debits and credits, I think that gets pretty scary. I mean, there's some fundamentals that I think are...
We've got to teach T-accounts.
Go back the old days. But putting that to one side, there is also that, as we spoke, an element of which, if the industry is changing, the industry is changing. So when you talk about skills to be learnt, I think they'll learn about technology more. They'll learn how to use the best of technology. Rather than using 20% of technology, let's use 50% of technology. I think they'll start learning other skills, like the soft skills that have always been spoken of. So, I mean, it's something that of all people...
Learn how businesses work.
Yes.
And what drives them, and what are the levers to pull.
Absolutely. My mother, when I've described, she's asked me to try and understand what I do, described it. And she had a mental image of hundreds of thousands or tens of thousands of accountants out on the street, like basically sleeping on cardboard boxes. And I think one of the interesting things about our profession is there's no shortage of services that offer more value, to be honest, to be done. Like, they're not being done because the compliance work, if I talk to a lot of accounting firms going, you've been told so long you've got to do more advisory work, why aren't you doing it? They go, well, I'd love to, but I just can't get to it.
The resources. And I think that's a key element of what process automation can deliver for the future. You know, all the signs on the horizon are that the resource crisis that we're in today is not going to get any better, and if anything, it might get worse. And so one way of dealing with that is to be more efficient, so I can use my current resources more effectively, and process automation is really at the head of the queue of how we can achieve that.
Yeah, because if you think about it, what the process automation is going to do, it's not going to take out the complicated, sophisticated, the strategic, you know, the stuff that really takes the gray matter. It's going to take out the mundane. It's going to take out the repetitious. And if it, not only just retention of team members, because you're making the job more enjoyable, it's also about recruitment as well, saying we use good tech. Going back to your question in terms of where do we see it going? One of the big features we're currently beyond, we're planning, but also started a little bit of development on, is auto time. So auto time is the concept where you look at it and go, well, we're using the document management, the CRM system well. So we've actually got already recorded in there a very good description of my activities for the day. So in which case, why shouldn't an algorithm, an AI go through and say, listen, on the basis of what I can see for you and also your documents you've touched, you and past experience, and even look across your calendar, here's my suggestion of what your timesheet would be for your validation, slight change. And this is where AI is perfect for, is changes can then be fed back into the engine to say, well, why did we get this wrong? So you talk about recruitment, and even firms have said to me they've lost team members because they just get jack of doing timesheets after 15 years. They want to move, they don't necessarily want to move into commerce, they quite like their job, but they just get sick of it.
So that's an interesting concept of almost suggesting what the timesheet should look like, and you can then modified it. That's moving down the world of nudging people, isn't it?
Yeah.
And do you see the concept of nudging getting involved in all of this?
Yeah, absolutely. So I mean, it's another one of we say that I don't see the system being able to deliver perfect timesheets. It's definitely, and it's a great UX challenge actually, because what you really make it so that it's not gamification, but making it an enjoyable experience, be able to use sliders or something like that, be able to move stuff around really easily. But nudging in the terms of, say, having it so that effectively timesheets are ready for them to go straight away. Where I think we're a little bit lucky is doing this 20 years ago, I think it's a lot more difficult because effectively as a profession, we've largely moved towards more of a fixed cost type approach. So therefore the time doesn't need to be as quite, you know, precise as it used to be. Really what a lot of people are doing their timesheets for now is more about management purposes, is to say, listen, how do we recognize the stars? How do we recognize the clients that we're basically some of our clients
are. Also to give you some idea on cost.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, broadly saying, like, is that client getting an absolute dream for us, or are we winning or losing? But not, it doesn't need to be down the 6 minute units as much as it used to. There are obviously exceptions to this as well.
So I need to be wearing a chip in my brain so that when I'm standing in the shower thinking about my client, it'll record the time.
I don't think we're going to go that far, but Elon might be taking us there. I don't know. I'm watching that spot.
Elon may well take us there.
Yeah. So one of the things we are investing in Android phones is to have it so the call logs with your – everything's permission-based. So obviously nothing can not – and that sort of stuff needs to be at the employee permission level. But saying, listen, if we could get the call logs off that and effectively use matching to say this and that, that call, you know, ignore all the personal logs – but where a number correlates with a phone number in your client list, why shouldn't it just trigger up a suggested timesheet for that?
Yeah, absolutely right. Rob, give us a little bit of a heads up for those who don't know much about FYI, just what FYI is and what your vision is for what you're trying to achieve.
Yeah, it's an interesting one to do succinctly, but I'll give it a go. So we are a cloud provider for the accounting profession. So at our core and how we're recognized today is very much around the paperless office. And it actually has been a passion of mine. It's the third time I've done this style of product.
Fourth time, isn't it?
I try to drop one. You know you're getting old when you start dropping stuff off your CV rather than adding stuff in. So at the core where we launched with was, I've always believed that documents have been underestimated by the majors in terms of the importance to a practice. I think they're borderline compliance in terms of delivering practice outcomes. What also you want to do with whenever you're doing any sort of business in life is to make sure that you have a point of differentiation. So part of that is we wanted to make sure that it was backed by a scalable enterprise almost style process automation engine. So that's sort of the two of them together. We integrate with a range of different providers out there. So traditionally we've been very close to Xero and remain very close to Xero. I really like those guys and work closely with them. We have recently started to open up more, so we can actually integrate with other providers, including on-premise providers. So that's just part of a call out there.
If people are using an on-premise provider, potentially FYI could be part of their movement to the cloud.
Absolutely. So there's a bit of self-interest here when I'm saying this, but it's an interesting conversation in itself, which is the various firms we know talking to them, and you can almost guess is they're struggling a little bit saying I think most people agree that the cloud is inevitable. It's gonna happen. It's a matter of saying, how do I actually find a provider that can provide everything that I'm used to having, and also where I want to go to in the future. The reality is, there's no black and white answer out there today, I don't believe. Otherwise, everyone will be using it. So it, with a shift in technology like you and I have seen for, over the years from all the various movements, in the early days of a new era, you'll find that the early solutions don't have everything. So there's an element of which you have to be a bit pragmatic again and say, right, well, if I want to get what I want, I've got to compromise on this because the upside over here is a lot bigger. And also I may use a bit of a combination. So going back to your comment, your question, yes, we do believe that we can provide a bridge and start to get a foothold of, you know, even more than a foot, a leg or an arm up in the cloud, and then take a little bit of time to say, okay, how does the rest of the puzzle come together as well?
Yeah. So if I'm a practitioner sitting out there and I might be using AE or APS or Handysoft or something, or even Xero, what's the thinking? What should I be doing to get my head around this and sort of trying to formulate a plan?
I reckon it's something, which is my background is product management, is a good way to start, and it doesn't have to be War and Peace, is start off with by writing up a list, and various providers have this already, you probably get it from people, is what are your requirements? And start to rank them a little bit and say, that's non-negotiable. Just simply has to be that we can do billing out of multiple entities or whatever it is because of the nature of our business. But also be careful to make sure that list, work out what you can compromise on. And therefore, then you have effectively a checklist that you can start. Because if you don't have that, you'll end up jumping from looking from various opportunities, but going, I don't know. They all look good, but don't know.
Well, in fact, the best salesman will convince you not the best product.
Yeah.
That's what happens in that circumstance.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think being crystal clear about what your requirements are, including your non-negotiables, and then you can start to use that to say, okay, well, that means we can start to evaluate the provider, which is I think unlikely at this stage, but maybe a combination of providers that's going to get you to where you want.
Yeah, I think also there's value in having a look at what people like Microsoft were doing and Zapier's doing, getting your head around that so you can understand that, and then having a look at what FYI is doing so you can understand the differences and understand where this world's heading, because it's one of the big, what I call the big three technologies going forward, which is the robotic process automation, artificial intelligence, and big data and data analytics are three of the really big technologies which are going to impact the accounting profession going forward. Yeah. This one is the one that probably more than the others really deals with the heart of how we actually get stuff done.
Yeah.
And that's what can deliver a huge dividend in terms of how resources are being used in the firm.
Yeah.
So
the other key thing I reckon to watch out for, we all do it, and I do it too much with late night purchases on Amazon, is you can fall for the bright, shiny thing. It sounds amazing. And if you really, and sometimes it's basically technology that's looking for a problem type stuff. So a good way to, another way is almost that requirement is going a little bit more high level is to start to define what do we want to achieve here? What's the outcome we're looking for? Because you shouldn't change anything unless you're going to see a material improvement in either productivity and or client service levels. So potentially it's things like saying, listen, we want to be able to automate this particular process or basically achieve this, so that you start to look at it going, there is a reason we're doing this. We want to achieve these sorts of outcomes. So whatever it is, and therefore you make sure you don't fall for the trap of going, we went through all this pain, but I'm not sure we're that much better off.
Yeah, that's right. Rob, there's one other concept that we haven't talked about, which we'll quickly sneak in here right at the end, is one of the things that FYI's done is that you're creating this concept essentially of a library of processes, which enables a firm or FYI to have developed a process and then have other firms pick that up, so like sharing IP. Do you see that as an important element of what you're doing?
Yeah, absolutely. So we now are pushing out sample automations, including the associated templates, email templates, out to our member, our community. But yes, we are moving to the next stage in the next 2 weeks to make that so it can be peer-to-peer. And I think it's actually one of the great, really good things about our profession is our Facebook community is off the chart. I look in there and go, oh my God, that people are just so good to each other. And I think it's partly because the accounting profession almost has a surplus of work and we just don't have enough people to be able to do the work. So people aren't, it's not like real estate where they're fighting each other for the listings in the town. In our industry, it's more around saying, well, you're not going to, me making you better isn't going to affect me. So therefore, I'm more than happy to provide a little bit of what we're thinking, because chances are it's going to, what goes around comes around. So we do think that's important, because part of automations is one thing to get the engine, then you need to tailor it for what you need to do. And that can be a task in itself. And look at it and go, listen, what I need is 80% equal to what else someone needs. It just makes sense to share those resources.
People don't have to keep on reinventing the wheel.
Yeah.
Which has always been historically one of the biggest challenges. We're right up on time. So Rob, I want to thank you for that. For your contribution there. I hope that's given everyone a good understanding about what robotic processes is about. If you're interested in getting to understand more about FYI Docs, go and have a look at FYIDocs, just to make certain you've got that right, .com. Go and have a look. And I know Rob or one of his team will be delighted to talk with you about that. Before we close, Andrew, is there any questions?
Nothing's come through at the moment. So just a reminder, everybody, if you would like to ask a question now for David or Rob, just type it in and we'll read that out for you. Give it a moment.
Fantastic.
Lots of information, maybe no questions.
Yeah. All right. Okay. If there's no questions, thank you all for your participation. If you do have something jumps into your mind and you want to raise the question, don't hesitate just to flick an email to myself or to Rob. Be more than happy to respond to any questions that you might have. I hope you found this presentation helpful and look forward to talking with you again next time.
Thanks very much.
Thanks, Rob.
Here's everyone.
Thanks, everyone.